The Business of Intelligence Gathering.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm David Brancaccio. House Republicans have introduced their version of a bill that would ban insider trading by lawmakers, and they've taken out provisions in the Senate version of the bill that would have placed restrictions on the many men and women who peddle what's called political intelligence. From Washington, Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Policymakers and people trying to make changes to policy are always on the lookout for good information. James Thurber is a professor at American University.
Political intelligence in Washington is a very valuable commodity.
Political intelligence is more than just the words in a bill or who supports an amendment. Paul Aquale runs a consulting firm, and political intelligence used to be part of his portfolio.
It's the ability to put it into some kind of a context that is meaningful so that observers can figure out the likelihood of one event occurring or not occurring.
And he says there are plenty of buyers willing to pay top dollar for that kind of information.
News media, investment firms, corporations, any number of entities that have an interest in what may or may not happen on Capitol Hill.
The Senate's version of the bill would have required political intelligence firms to register with the government to file disclosure forms. The political intelligence industry objects to that, and House Republicans say the rules, as they're written, are too vague. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
They're about to stop selling bottled water in Grand Canyon National Park. Turns out a fifth of the waste collected by the park is from plastic bottles. But some are unhappy, including bottled water sellers like Coca-Cola, who, according to internal memos, made their displeasure known and worked to thwart the ban. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
The ban follows an activist and corporate tug-of-war and some pretty interesting emails about Coca-Cola. You see, Coke sells Dasani bottled water, and it's donated $13 million to national parks. More than a year ago, the head of the National Park Service seemed nervous about the ban in an email. Quote, "There are going to be consequences since Coke is a major sponsor." Coke officials complained the ban was disturbing. Then, last June, the service director caved, argues Jeff Rook at the nonprofit Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility.
Consumer choice was going to be the policy, and that is exactly the line that the bottlers had been using. Consumer choice is for shopping malls, not for national parks.
His group released the emails in November, at which point angry activists launched a petition campaign. The new ban means they win for now. If there's a backlash from Coke or other sponsors, parks could face money shortages at a time when taxpayer money is tight. For the record, a Coke spokesperson says the company's support will continue. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And now let's do the numbers. The Dow is currently trading at 12,864. You'll soon come across a lot of chatter about the prospect the Dow will cross above the 13,000 milestone, where it was back in March of 2008. Profit forecasts are part of it, but experts say Greece has to avoid unraveling completely for these prices to stick. Dow currently down 15 points, about a tenth percent. S&P 500 pretty flat so far today. The NASDAQ composite is up a tenth percent.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Invest Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, a European location offering a workforce that's well-educated, smart, and driven. More at investni.com/invest. By GoToMeeting by Citrix, bringing high-definition video conferencing to online meetings for face-to-face collaboration. More at GoToMeeting.com. And by The Economist, presenting its third annual Ideas Economy Innovation event on March 28th in Berkeley, California. More information at innovation.economist.com.
Right out in front in the Ponzi Scheme Hall of Fame is Bernard Madoff. The New York financier pled guilty to a $65 billion fraud in 2009. But if prosecutors are right, Alan Stanford should have his own shrine. Stanford's accused of a $7 billion scheme to defraud investors. The case may have fallen off your radar, but Stanford's on trial in a Houston court, and today the government's star witness is on the stand. Terry Langford is a Houston Chronicle reporter covering the trial. Morning, Terry.
Good morning.
Remind us about the whole Alan Stanford situation. He's accused of crimes involving dollar figures that have a B for billions, right?
That is correct. He is accused in a 14-count indictment of fraud through CD sales from his offshore bank in Antigua. He was arrested, and he is considered the largest accused Ponzi schemer to be tried.
So as you've watched the trial so far, is there an emerging picture of Alan Stanford himself?
Probably you would have to say that was tied to the testimony of James Davis, his former CFO. He worked for Stanford for nearly 20 years. He's talked about secret bank accounts in Switzerland. He's talked about bribes to Antigua. Others have testified again and again about his sort of quick temper. He had a desire to always have the best buildings, the best service, the best of everything.
I think the world will be paying close attention to the Alan Stanford trial, in part to figure out how systems set up to protect investors broke down so spectacularly, it seems.
That's what's been really interesting to watch, how infrequently the SEC seemed to check in. In 2005, they sent a letter to Antigua saying they were interested. Little did they know that the Antiguan regulator they were sending to was supposedly on the payroll. I cover government a lot, and people I talk to in government always say, you expect too much of government. You give us too much credit. And we have to remember that it's very slow, and that's what happened here. There were people that had suspicions, but they didn't quickly follow through.
Terry Langford, Houston Chronicle, thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
And finally, I don't know, is this creepy, or do you feel safer in the knowledge that TomTom, the Netherlands-based maker of GPS navigation devices, is coming out with a new one that tattles on bad drivers? It's for fleets of trucks. The GPS records who's driving prudently and sanely in return for better deals from a European insurance company. I can just hear the TomTom synthesized voice. Right turn ahead. Your premium just went up. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. On APM, American Public Media.
There's been a lot of belt tightening since the economy went bad, quite literally, as it turns out.
When times are bad, people get healthier over many dimensions, and there seems to be a reduction in obesity when the economy weakens.
I'm Kai Ryssdal, fighting obesity the Freakonomics way. We'll have that and the news from Wall Street next time on Marketplace from APM. That's American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.